Morning. Good to see everybody. Glad to be with you. I got to thinking when I was driving over here from Arkansas that next month, 1st of October, 30 years ago, it's 30 years ago when I moved here. It's hard to believe. I look out and think about Don Boatwright, and I also think about how my son owes him a lot of money. Scott's dad used to give him, I'm not talking about quarters, he'd give him $10 bills. I mean, I'd get home and I'd say, well, Don gave you some money and Jonathan bring it out and it was a $10 bill. I'm thinking, I want to get in that line, you know, where's mine? But I think about Brother Gabhart and Brother Simpson, all of the Simpsons now, I think about them. And I know so many of you are new, and you may know these names, maybe you may not, but they were an integral part. You couldn't have this congregation without the people that I'm mentioning. Of course, the Robarts, close friends for a long time. Good to see Lee and Tim and Chuck and Barbara. We used to garden together. That was quite an ordeal, but I think about it now. Chuck and Barbara, it was a lot of fun. Rick and Kathy. I think I bought their van. I'm trying to remember. Did I buy y'all's van? I can't remember. I paid you for it, right? And when I think about Perry and Pam, Pam saved my wife when we moved here. She was not a happy person. I had brought her all the way from Texas, away from her family. You know, women are hard to uproot anyway. They put deep roots down. And I had just yanked her up, brought her up here. Kentucky, where is that, you know, to those of us that lived in Texas? But it was such a wonderful experience. This congregation, we were at the old building. I didn't burn it down. That happened after I left. This building was built while I was here. So it's been added on to, but I still think about preaching here and seeing it the same way. But lots of faces have gone on to be with the Lord. And my great mentor, D. Bowman, of course, just died. His funeral will be tomorrow. Scott asked me about it, and he said, do you really think you ought to have been there? And I said, well, there's a part of me obviously wants to do that, but I know what D. would tell me is you're in a gospel meeting, you're going to preach to the living, and the living can repent. I can't do anything about my circumstances, but go preach the gospel. So I appreciate Scott saying that. I appreciate the fact that if I decided to have been absent tomorrow to be at the funeral, I think you all would have understood my long association with him. But I know where Dee would want me to be. So good to be with you. I think about all these faces, and what that tells me is that Perry Bratton has just gotten old. That's all that means. All right, we're going to talk this week about a family. We're going to talk about young people. We're going to talk about parents. Nobody's perfect about this. Folks, if you had to be perfect to raise your kids, nobody would be a success. None of us are perfect. We all are broken. We all have sinned. We all at times still sin. And sometimes in the interaction with our children, and if you think about it, we were children when we had children. I mean, we were so young, all of us mostly. And when you think about we were growing up learning how to act, how to serve God, how to ourselves grow. I hope the last sermon that we'll preach about the hurting parent of rebellious children, I look out in the congregation where I preach at Springdale, Arkansas, and they're just family after family that their kids aren't faithful. Their kids don't serve God anymore. They've walked away. And I know that pain. I've talked to too many of them. And I know that pain exists here. And I know there are kids that I knew back in that day. But here's the deal. All along life's way, people are going to walk away from God. And you're going to be shocked about the people that will walk away from God. In fact, someday you may hear I did. See, there's no guarantee about any of us. And we can't guarantee that our children are going to follow God, that they're going to be faithful and true to Him all of their days. And sometimes we'll beat ourselves up. Parents are the worst about doing that because we feel responsible. And I can't take that away from you. That responsibility is true. And we're going to talk about that. The fact that a man who becomes an elder of a congregation, what's one of the things you have to look at him about? If he ruled his own house well, then he'll know how to rule the house of God. Right? So there's a correlation between whether the children become successful in the faith of the Lord, of a man, to him being able to rule the house of God. So I can't take that away. I can't take that responsibility away. It's there. The Bible talks about it too many places, just not just in the qualification of elders. But having said that, we're gonna also realize that they are their own people. And they will make decisions that are not the decisions that parents have made. And so that's what we're going to talk about in the class time today. I don't know how we would know among churches of Christ that are conservative, non-institutional churches, how we would know how many of our kids have walked away from God. The closest that I can come to that are the research of the Barna Group and others. You have books that are very recent out that tell you about the evangelical world. Evangelical world would be the ones who still believe the Bible is the Word of God. They still believe that Jesus died and rose on the third day. I mean, physically and truly that event took place. In the main things that we talk about in Christianity, you and I would find commonality with most people that would claim to be a part of the evangelical world. I'm talking about in the main points of what we talk about makes up Christianity. Of the evangelicals, the research that has been done is that 2 out of 3 of those kids do not come back to the faith. When they leave home, they leave the Lord too. But here's the thing you'll also discover. Sometimes we think, well, that happens in college. They go away and they have unbelieving professors and state universities. And so we think, well, if we send them to Florida College, that'll be better. And you can go through all of that, and at the end of the day, what you find out in the statistics is that where we lost those kids is not at college. We lost them when they were in middle school and high school. That's where the statistics tell you that their doubts began to take hold, and in such a way that, yes, other circumstances furthered that. I preached at Texas, where Texas A&M is. I preached at College Station for 13 years. We at times had 120 college kids in the congregation. It was like having a whole church inside of a church. And think about all the energy that bunch brings. Every year we'd have 40 new college kids show up. One of the largest universities in the United States. I think it's number 3 now as far as student population. I think 72,000 is their student population. So obviously you're going to get a lot of kids that come, particularly in Texas. You're going to get a lot of kids that come, and they come from churches just like Eastland. And so we really had sort of a microcosm to kind of, how's church health going on in Texas? And how's local churches doing? Because you see the product. Their kids come. And you know what you find out? They're just like any congregation. You have those that are not committed at all. The parents drop them off, and then we don't see them again. Well, we do on Parents' Day. And then the parents show up, and the elders and I always reveled in this, sort of. We'd talk about it beforehand. Because the parents believe their kids are coming, and so they come up to us, and we start introducing ourselves to the kids, and the parents are looking over at them like, I thought you went here. You know, because that's a discussion that the parents have got to get involved in. Sometimes we'd encounter parents, they were shocked. They didn't know their kids. But that's what I always said to the young people when you started the year. I said, nobody's going to get you up to go to church. Not mom and daddy anymore. There's not anybody going to ring the, knock on the door, bang on it, get you up. My dad used to throw cold water on me. Whatever it took to get you out of bed, we're going to get you going. You're going to get yourself going, or you're not. You've got to decide whether you believe this stuff. You have to do your own homework. You have to look at the Bible and say, is this the truth? Is it the absolute truth? This tell me exactly how the world functions or should function and where we're going. That we came from God from eternity and we're going back to God. And that there's a spiritual part of us. We're not, as Darwinian evolution would say, just we came from the goo to the zoo to me and you. I mean, we eventually get there. And that kind of reasoning affects how somebody thinks about the world. And so young people, so important, so precious. You're the future. I mean, look at all these guys, and I'll have to get your names down again, but they were telling me all of their names. And I think about, and I haven't met y'all yet, met some of you the other night, but all of you ladies, young men, you're the future. You're whether or not congregations will go on and whether or not they will exist in a healthy way. So let's think together about this morning what we should do. Am I supposed to have a changer up here? Or do y'all do that? It's on where? Ah, if I would have been where I was supposed to be, right? All right. So what's the first thing that maybe you think about when young people go away from the Lord? Well, the first thing I would think about is that they really don't know who the Lord is. And by that I mean what we will find out as we talk about some of the things during the course of this week that we have together is that a lot of parents, I mean, if we think that just bringing them to church, they come to church. I mean, there's a lot of parents that'll be here, and their kids will be here every time. But there's a difference in saying that somebody is faithful. We always say that. Are they faithful? What do we usually mean by that? Do they come Sunday morning? I mean, now y'all only meet the one time. There are a lot of churches that do that. So do you come on Sunday? Do you come back on Wednesday night? Are you here for gospel meetings? If we usually use the word, are you faithful, that's what we mean. We mean that, but I'm going to tell you, faithful, yes, you should understand, as I should understand, means a whole lot more than that. Do you have a relationship with the Lord? I mean, does He mean everything to you? When He says, what is the greatest commandment? The greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all of your mind. I mean, what does that mean? What does all mean? I moved up here 30 years ago, didn't even know about the University of Kentucky. I learned how vital the University of Kentucky is. Those of you that are rooting for the University of Louisville, bless your hearts, but the University of Kentucky was everything, right? I moved to Texas A&M. I'm a Red Raider. I was behind enemy lines. I mean, I used to tell people that's like the second religion in town. It's in many hearts, it's the first religion. I mean, the energy, the zest, the zeal, the relationship, that whatever thing means. I mean, one guy told me one time, he said, I told my kids I'd pay for them to go to school, but he said I was paying for one school. And he meant that, every last word of it. If they chose A&M, he'd pay for it. If they went somewhere else, he wouldn't have paid for it. And I bet there's some people that go to the University of Kentucky, they're the same way. Now I've moved to where the University of Arkansas is. And as one of my Texas friends said, all y'all have is that little piggy chant. But they are the same, they are the same way. Now, do you understand all when it comes to the University of Kentucky? Do you understand all if you're an Aggie or if you're a hog? Do you understand, a Razorback, do you understand it? You're all in, right? There is a commitment. There is a zeal. When it comes to the Lord, is that the way it is? There are some people come every Sunday. We sit in the pews. Our families come with us. But if we were to watch them during the week, if we were to really think about our lives during the week, is God all to us? Does He encompass everything? When we rise up, when we lie down, when we walk by the way, are we talking with our kids about a relationship with Almighty God? There's too many young people. This is the very first reason they leave. They do not know who Jesus is. They don't have a relationship with Him. The very first thing that we have to understand about God then is that He has the right and the power, the authority to rule in our lives. He is the Creator. He alone has the answers to life's most perplexing questions. Everybody's going to have to ask it. You start with the book of Ecclesiastes with somebody outside of the Lord, and to look at their life and say, do you realize what you're going to do? You're going to get out of college. You're going to make money. You're going to buy a big home. You're going to raise a family. You're going to hope to go on vacations. You're going to hope to do whatever great hobbies that you like to do. You're going to go to UK. Maybe you go to UL games. You may go do whatever it is that pumps you up in life. But sooner or later, you're going to face the reality that someday you're going to get down to a room that has a bed and a table, and somebody's going to come and get you up and bathe you and take care of you and feed you, and you're just a step between that and death. And when you boil down life of what it really is, what's the meaning? What's the purpose? If Darwinian evolution is true, if that's where we came from, and there really is no spiritual part to us at all, it just becomes, as the writer of Ecclesiastes said, vanity of vanities. All is vanity and a chasing after the wind, of trying to grasp what has no meaning in it. If God is our creator, and He is, then He alone has the answers. He knows where we came from. He knows why we're here, what we're to do while we're here. And He knows where we're going after we die. There was a governor running for a re-election that had stumped all over the state. Tired that end of the day. He got in the line. They were serving barbecue chicken. He was famished. He hadn't eaten all day. As he made his way through the line, they were giving one piece of chicken out. And since he hadn't eaten all day, when he got to the lady that was handing the chicken out, he requested two pieces, and she said, "You get one piece." He said, "Ma'am, I'm starving to death. I haven't eaten all day. I want an extra piece." She said, "You get one piece." He said, "Do you know who I am? I'm the governor of this state." She looked at him and said, "Do you know who I am? I'm the woman in charge of the chicken, and you get one piece." Those people that broke into the Capitol back, was it January this year? I don't care what side you were on in all of that. I don't think there's a decent person on any side that could say that was okay. That was all right. Because if that kind of breakdown happens, if we don't know who's in charge, if we don't have a system by which we respect law, we you know, throw the bums out, if you don't like them, that's been the great blessing of democracy. You can vote them out. But once we vote them in, once we decide, we understand that it's anarchy, or it's understanding authority. It's understanding who has the right to rule and who has the power to enforce that rule. What God is trying to tell us on every hand is who He is. Y'all may not know this, but I'm a beekeeper. This is a picture of a frame of capped brood. That's the egg-laying machine that the queen is. In the height of her day, she can lay 1,500 eggs. Ladies, just imagine that. The kind of eating that she has to do, the energy that has to be fed her, so that she can, because she's the life of that hive. If they don't hatch them out, they hatch out in about 21 days. These are worker cells. Some of them maybe already hatched out that are in those empty circles. I want you to stop and think about, if you don't believe in God and you open up a beehive. First of all, bees were all solitary. All ever the bees are solitary. I mean, bumblebees, there's a few others, but just grant me that most are solitary. What if you're a Darwinian evolutionist? What prompted the bees to look at one another and say, "I think we ought to work together"? And because you can't even begin to describe the complex mechanisms that take place inside of a hive. Here's one. Do you know what the shape is of those cells? They're hexagons. Hexagons. What little bee brain decided in the middle of evolution, have some kind of discussion and say, "I believe we ought to make circles"? I mean, because you could make circles, but if I made circles and if I could make a circle on top there, you lose that little funny triangular. You're going to lose that space. You know what a hexagon does? It allows you what's called tessellation to occupy the most space on a plane. In other words, one side of a hexagon is one side of another, and one side of the next one, and so forth. Even on the back, they're the same. The three bottoms are the same to the one that faces the other way. It is the only shape that can do that. It gives you the most places on that plane for her to lay her eggs, and therefore to have the hive continue to prosper and do well. Who thought of that? Who said, let's make a hexagon? Those little tiny spots in the bottom of the one are the eggs, if you can see that. And then there's brood you see out there. She is, as I said, an egg-laying machine. She breeds one time in her life with maybe 15 drones, and then she stores that, what's called a spermatheca. And when she wants to lay a worker, and by the way, ladies, all the workers in a hive are girls. The guys, they eat, and they mate with the queen. That's just their whole purpose in life. So, you know, there must be a philosophy there. But when you look at a hive and you see what's going on, she decides by measuring the cell, that's the size of a worker cell, and she fertilizes the egg. She has the ability to turn it on, turn it off. She fertilizes the egg, and it becomes a worker. If she wants to raise a guy, a drone, she doesn't fertilize it because they're bigger. They're fatter. They have big eyes because they mate in the air, so they have to be able to see her. So they're much, much bigger heads than a normal bee. Who can even possibly contend when you think about even the fact that a sexual relationship has to take place to produce the next generation? How did any of that happen in Darwinian evolution? But design, one who has a mind so far beyond us, you can't open. Scott Byers, a beekeeper, by the way, and he and I were saying it. In fact, I think it was his wife said, the very words that I'm saying, she said, you open a hive, you can't help but believe in God. Do you young people know who God is? Choosing the right one to serve is absolutely imperative, isn't it? Joshua 24:15, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods that your fathers served that were on the other side of the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. You're going to have to choose. That was the point that we started the lesson with. You have to decide when your mom and dad, when you leave and you go somewhere else, you're going to choose whether you believe that God is. And here's the deal. There is no such thing as absolute freedom. When I graduated, my dad pretty much gave me three choices. He said, you go to college, or you go to trade school, you become a farmer. That would have been like going to trade school. Or you get a J-O-B. But here's the option you don't have. You're not staying here and loafing about. I always added a fourth in there. You can go live with the grandparents. But you're not staying here. I mean, there's no absolute freedom. When you think about it, are you going to have a car payment? You might have a car payment now. Are you under somebody when you have a car payment? You buy a house, are you under somebody? We talk about, you know, the rest of your life, you're tied to a bank. You're having to make a payment for it, right? Insurance, taxes, utilities, school expenses. Do the laws of the land apply to you? See, there's no such thing as somebody saying, I'm just absolutely free to do whatever I want to do. No, we're not absolutely free. The Bible says to us that, let me go back. Well, I'm going forward. Sorry about that. Is there a back on here? Romans 6:16, do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slaves whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading unto righteousness? We serve somebody, and that's the point that we need to see. Secondly, we need to understand that sin is fun, and we need to understand that our kids, from an intuitive point, know that and understand that. We all do. Hebrews 11 states it in 24 to 26 about Moses. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming, valuing, estimating what's the value of each, the reproach of Christ or the treasures of Egypt, the greater riches of Christ than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked to the reward. What does that mean, young person? He looked down the road. He looked at, can you imagine the treasures of Egypt? Stephen tells us that Moses was mighty in words and deeds in Acts 7 when he announced that. I remember watching the Ten Commandments. Do you remember? It opens up with Charlton Heston. Norma Bowman always had this phrase. She said, my favorite character in the Bible is Moses because he looks so much like Charlton Heston. And you have this amazing, you know, he's building. Remember that in the opening? I mean, turning those big monuments up, and that's how the movie opens. That's Acts 7. Stephen says he was mighty in words and deeds in Egypt. I always find that interesting when he told God he couldn't speak. Stephen says he was mighty in words and deeds in Egypt. Think of what he gave up. He might have been the next Pharaoh, maybe. He was going to be high up. He's had he is the most wealthy person you can imagine in our day and age, Bill Gates, whoever. And yet, he looks at that in one hand, and he looks at suffering and the reproach of Christ in the other, and he chose that. He chose to walk that life in the wilderness wanderings and all the heartache he put up with the people of God because he understood the reward. You got to look to the end, don't you? Y'all remember the sociologist that came up with what was called the marshmallow test? It was a book that's still in print. It was a famous test that was done where school kids were given one big marshmallow. And they were told that they could eat that marshmallow at any point they wanted to. But if they would wait, the teacher was going to leave the room for, I think, 15 minutes, that if they would wait, then they could get another big marshmallow. And then they could eat both of them. So the teacher walks out. And kids are looking and they're watching them on screen, you know, and the kids are looking at the marshmallows. Sure enough, sooner or later, some of them start eating the marshmallow. But there were kids that just sat there. They might have been looking at it, but they just sat there. They didn't eat it. And when they returned, true to what they said, they gave them another marshmallow and they got to eat. And then they followed those kids through the rest of their lives and documented. And it turns out that the ones that would refrain, the ones that could control themselves, the ones that had self-control were the ones that prospered in life. They had higher education, they had higher incomes, they were just looking at it from a physical standpoint. They had happier marriages. They lasted in marriage more than the ones that were gratifying themselves immediately. Now, doesn't the Bible teach that? Exactly the point that happened in the life. Immediate or postponed reward. What I tell young people is when you make a choice, you choose to look down the road. You can look at liquor and drugs and sex, and they are all fun from a physical standpoint. Or people wouldn't be doing it all, right? But Satan never tells you everything, does he? Never tells you about what could happen if you do have sex with your boyfriend. He didn't tell her that you could get pregnant the first time. No one told her that her boyfriend and his parents, who supposedly were Christians, would have nothing to do with her unless she had an abortion. No one told her that she would be a single mom for 7 years, rearing a son by herself, till a man was willing to take her and make that child his own. See, Satan never tells you all those lies, does he? You look at it on TV and what happens in movies, and people can sleep with whoever they want to, and just everything turns out fine. Nobody gets sexually transmitted diseases. Nobody and it's just not so. When I lived in Longview, Texas, my first work, there was a place where in the Walmart parking lot where all the kids met for the drag strip, I guess, whatever you would call it, where that was the beginning and the end, or whichever side you started on. So these kids are all out there one night, and a guy's drunker than he can be, high on dope too. He gets in a car, and he runs into a crowd of young people that are just standing there. Pinning a young man under his car, he drags him out of the parking lot to a loop that went around the city. And he gets on the loop, and there are people that finally see the horrible thing that are taking place, and they rammed his vehicle and forced him off the road to crash in the ditch. That boy's body's still under that car. You know what happened, what started in that parking lot and went out on the loop and then went off the road where they ran him off? Was a burn strip about this wide of what was that boy. And sun and rain and wind did not wash it away, and nobody went out and tried to scrub it off. It took almost 2 years for it to finally vanish. Can you imagine if you started there with your young person, just start there with them. And I don't say anything, just walk. Have them keep looking at it. And just walk and walk until you see where it goes off the road. And then ask, is it okay if we drink? Proverbs 7:22 talks about the one who thinks they can just have sex with somebody, no problem. All at once, he follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a stag is caught fast till an arrow pierces the liver, or I'm getting to where I can't even read 28 point. Isn't that horrible? One day you're going to be old too. He does not know that it will cost him his life. Or if you drink, Proverbs 23, do not look at the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup and goes down smoothly. In the end, it bites like a serpent and stings like an adder. You know the rest of it. There's look down the road. I have a grandfather, my maternal grandfather, who was an alcoholic. Do you know what that did to the family? You know what it did to my mom? You know what it did to her siblings? Mess beyond mess on that side of the family. Continues to this day. I live the consequences of that in my own personal life. But here's what sin is. This is what it does. Beware it. Beware it. Thirdly, you can make the wrong kind of friends. What's 1 Corinthians 15:33 say? Repeat it. Evil companions, corrupt, good morals. Y'all are all members of the Church of Christ, so nobody's going to speak out. You know. Evil companions, corrupt, good morals. A principle, a proverb almost, a solid statement. And isn't it the truth? Deuteronomy 13, 6 and 8, it said, if your brother, the son of your mother, the son of your daughter, or your wife you embrace, or your friend who is as your own soul, entices you secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods, you shall not yield to him or listen to him, your eye pity him, not pity him, nor shall you spare him, nor shall you conceal him. They were supposed to stone him to death. You read that and you go, man, that sounds harsh. But here's the deal. Would a true friend kill you? Would a true friend harm you? I'm talking about if we think of physical. This is talking about what's real, spiritual, eternal death. If you follow other gods that they're enticing you to go after, this is what's going to happen to you. You know two examples in the Bible, don't you? Amnon. Amnon had a friend like that, didn't he? Jonadab, who said, well, you want your half-sister Tamar? Here's what to do. And you know how that ended. What about Rehoboam? Who listens to the old men, give him good advice, but instead of paying attention to the old men, think of what his reign would have been like. He listens to the people he grew up with, the princes, the young men. Disaster came. Last point, the lesson's yours. The cares of life, and we're going to talk about this more than just now. In Matthew 13, 22, as what was sown among the thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word and it proves unfaithful. Man, that's a graphic word. Chokes. Think about somebody grabbing somebody around the neck. Chokes the word of God in you and it is unfruitful. School, money, fun. My parents didn't serve God for a long time. Their old age, at least in my dad's case, I think, has come back. But when I went off to college, you know what advice I got? Don't let church come between you and school. Your main deal is a focus on school. You make school first. there was a side of me, I didn't want to be disrespectful to my parents, but there was a side of me said, that's junk. I don't care if my parents spoke it. Your parents can tell you what's not so. Listen to God. Jesus demands our all. And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Thank you very much for listening this morning.